So I really thought I was done talking about like Christianity and God and like purpose, meaning related things for the time being, and was going to go on to different topics. But then I saw on Jordan Peterson's like YouTube channel that he did an episode with Alex O'Connor. I'd been listening to Alex O'Connor's Within Reason podcast for like past week or so, couple weeks. I'd been listening to more of his stuff, and he'd been interviewing a lot of people in relation to topics on religion and looking at the religious texts and stuff from like an anthropological point of view, where it's like, oh, how what is the academic research on where this actually came from historically and not necessarily a theological framework. He's talked to like some theologians as well. I haven't watched those interviews, so I don't really get into that topic, but I think the anthropological stuff has been interesting, where it's like, okay, how does this idea become into this idea, come into this idea, and how did like humans make these ideas become these things rather than looking at it as like purely a theological text or from God and that sort of thing. And I found that to be interesting. And I had no clue that this conversation was going to happen. So when this conversation did happen, and it pointed to some of the questions that I was thinking about in the last podcast episode with the truth of the claim of Jesus Christ and his resurrection or being born of the Virgin Mary. In particular, they talk about the resurrection at some point in this interview. It's more like Alex is interviewing Jordan, but I found it interesting, and it gave me a little more insight into my thinking on the question that I talked about in the past episode. It doesn't change my conclusions at all, but it does illuminate more things. So I'm going to switch over. If you're watching in video format, I'm going to listen to the podcast, switch over, and you can see the Substack essay that I wrote. A link in the description for the Substack essay. It'll probably do a better representation of what I'm thinking because it's so detailed that you have to like think through the logic, and I don't know whether the logic's actually sound or not either because I haven't really battle tested it in any way. So first of all, we're gonna go, yeah, we're gonna look at some clips of this podcast, and it's gonna remind me of what I was thinking.
Just the thing about the resurrection accounts is that they're all look. So I could say something like this, which will just annoy people, but it doesn't matter. I believe the accounts, but I have no idea what they mean.
When you say
You
you
see?
believe the accounts, do you mean, and I hate to be sort of
Yeah.
pedantic here, it seems pedantic, but do you mean you believe that these are things that happened such that if
See,
I, if now,
that's a
I know
strange
you don't like
statement.
that, let me put it this way,
Yeah.
if I went back in time with a Panasonic video camera and put that camera in front of the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, would the little LCD screen show a man walk out of that tomb?
I would suspect yes.
So that to me seems like a belief in the historical event of the resurrection, or at least of Jesus leaving the tomb, which means that when somebody says, you know, do you believe that Jesus rose from the dead? It doesn't seem clear to me why you're not able to just say, it would seem to me, yes.
Because I have no idea what that means, and neither did the people who saw it.
So I won't talk at all about like Jordan Peterson's view on the whole thing because it seems like, you know, if you're a Christian looking for him to validate your opinion on like the historical account of Jesus and then say, oh, he's a Christian, therefore he's in my camp because it has to be the historical truth that makes you a Christian. I don't know whether that claim is true or not from like a Christian standpoint of whether you have to believe in the historical fact of Jesus in order to be a Christian. That's kind of the conclusion I come to at the very end. But what it does pinpoint is the question that I was looking at was that question of, oh, did the historical truth happen? And because I don't think the historical truth happened in like a sense of, I don't know how that's physically possible. So therefore, I lean towards, oh, it couldn't have happened in the material world. Then you end up with that being the crux of me not being Christian. But something that they do talk about is that there's other ways to look at this that don't have to be from that material perspective. And one of the things that really struck me was when Jordan Peterson brings up the idea of abstractions as more real than real. And that was something that I just went off with and was like, wait a minute, that might make some sort of sense here. So we'll look at that specific quote now.
One of the things you but not me. One of the things you pointed to in the analysis that you did of a talk I had with Jonathan Pageau is my somewhat tongue-in-cheek comment that God is the ultimate fictional character.
Yes.
Right, which I think is a hilarious line, by the way.
Yeah.
But
by the way, I think I misunderstood. Now that I've watching that back, that's the thing I say I think I might have misunderstood. And maybe that's what you were about to tell me. I shouldn't interrupt.
Let's walk through that.
Yeah.
Because people see, and this is part of this underlying materialist, atheist, enlightenment ethos. People think that fiction and fact are opposites. It's like, no, they're not.
Okay.
Not at all. Okay, so let's use an analogy to begin with. What's more real, things or numbers? Okay, now I'm not going to make a case for either of those positions. I'm just saying that's an actual question.
Yeah.
You talk to mathematicians, they think, well, numbers are way more real than things. Things are evanescent. They disappear. They flash in and out of existence. Numbers are permanent.
Yeah.
And then you could think about it biologically. It's like, well, how useful is numeracy to survival?
Yeah.
Like very, right? When you become numerate, you're powerful in a way that the mere grip you have on the individual facts doesn't afford at all. So there are forms of abstraction that are clearly more real than the things from which they're abstracted, or at least as real. I would say more real because they're so powerful. Well, fiction is an abstraction.
Sure.
So that idea makes a lot of sense to me coming from a computer engineering background. So when you engineer computers or make computer hardware, or any programmer would get this too, everything a programmer does is an abstraction because they have this programming language. When you make an if-else statement, what it's actually doing at bottom is some assembly programming. But when actually at bottom of that isn't just assembly programming, it's a bunch of ones and zeros that make it so that different things happen in the circuit of the computer. And then it's a question of like, okay, what are those ones and zeros? Those ones and zeros, it's not ones and zeros. Those don't actually exist. It's electricity. And it's like, okay, so it's electron particles moving around in such a way that causes this output to happen. So you can keep going further and further down. But you started with the idea of a computer. And it was that idea of the computer that's powerful enough to get you to make the physical reality a thing. So is the idea of the computer real? As in, does the computer physically exist? Well, this individual instantiation of the computer exists in like a physical sense, but that idea of the computer, it's like back to the Platonic ideal of a thing. The Platonic ideal of a thing, if you're thinking physically, never exists in physical space. Like a perfect circle doesn't exist in perfect space, but you can imagine the perfect circle. So all that, but does that make it not real because it's in your imagination? So then we get to the idea of sci-fi, where it's like, okay, every single technological advancement we've made as of late has been an idea that has existed in sci-fi before. So were those things never real until they're practiced in reality? It seems really stupid to make that claim, as in like the realness of a thing is only a matter of does it exist in physical space. So computers were never real until you made the physical instantiation of a computer. Circles were never real until you like did the curve that made the circle. It's like, that seems absurd to me that the idea can't be real in that sense. So that annoyed me a lot to think about that, where it's like, okay, so it seems like for something, for us to like claim that something is true, it's more like, oh, it's true insofar as it has utility, useful value, as in we can use that for a thing. It goes back to this quote of in science where it's all scientific models are wrong, but some are useful. But they're so useful that in our day-to-day use of language, we just talk about the model as if it's true. We're not even talking about the real thing. We're just using the model, but we just like accept it as like, okay, yep, that's how things work. Now, admittedly, you'll break the model at some point, and then you're like, okay, now we have a new conception. Now we use the new model. But we don't, because Newtonian physics is wrong based on the fact that Einsteinian physics is more true than Newtonian physics, but we still use Newtonian physics in like the proper context, in which it's more useful to use Newtonian physics, even though at base it's Einsteinian, or at base it's more like quantum physics. But you're not going to use quantum mechanics equations to do your space calculations. Like, that's not going to happen. You're going to be using Newton and other classical mechanical methods. So there's something weird there about to what extent do you need the true thing in order to do anything, or do you just need something that's true insofar as it's useful? And that's, yeah, it gets to a question of like, what is actually true? And we might not even care about truth. Well, humans don't care about truth. That's true as well. But we don't care about truth. That's it. Truth. That's true. But yeah, it, that conversation really annoyed me in that sense. So it gets back to, okay, when evaluating whether or not someone is a Christian, do you evaluate it on the basis of a material truth claim of, oh, do you believe that the Bible insofar as it's a historical text, because we all know it's not entirely historical, but some of the things are historical accounts or can be mapped to true historical events. But is it just, yeah, does your care about the truthiness of the Bible only matter insofar as you think that the stuff that can be mapped to historical truth is historically true? Or does it matter more these sort of metaphorical truths? And then there might be a whole spectrum in terms of how that goes. But yeah, what is the thing that makes you a true believer in the story of Jesus Christ? Is it just that he's a historical man that existed, and the resurrection happened, all the miracles happened, and those things happened as distinct events in history, that if we were to go back with that Panasonic camera and look at the camera, we would see those miracles happen? Or is it more some other layer of truthiness that we accept more? So I don't know. My conclusion's still the same, in the sense of I'd have to figure out whether or not Christians accept a non-historical truth claim to be Christian. And then if that's not the case, then I don't think I want to be Christian, because I don't think I could ever accept the historical truth claims, except for probabilistically. You might just be able to say, well, I suspect that that happened. And is that enough? Is that enough certainty in the kingdom of God? I have no clue. Like, if you're going based on like the Protestant notion of you're saved by your belief, your true belief in Jesus, that sort of thing, and not saved by your works. And there's a bunch of other takes on that. So it depends on like what denomination of Christianity accepts a non-historical truth claim to the existence of Jesus. And that would probably be where I'd fall under if you're trying to use a Christian framework, or if you're trying to use a Christian label. But if we're at that point, then I probably just don't want to use the Christian label, because I think you just confuse way too many people at that point. And I think that's the issue that Jordan Peterson falls into, because he doesn't want to accept anyone that's using a materialist truth claim. And a lot of Christians do that without knowing that they're doing that. And he doesn't want to answer the question in such a way that people are just using it as a means to say, are you a part of my tribe or not? Because it's more or less functions that way when a lot of people ask him that question. And then, yeah, that becomes a whole worm of issues as well. And that's an issue that I have with Christianity in general, is the whole notion of, do I want this label as a way to social signal in a tribal sense? Or do I want this label because I think it's the closest thing to truth, so I'm going to use that label because I actually believe that? Like, yeah, I don't want to mislabel myself. And if I do label myself, I don't want to label because of the social benefits. And again, we look back at episode 3 to understand like what I was getting at there. But yeah, that's basically all we have. Again, it made me think more about the issue, and I really, really did like the idea of thinking about truth beyond just the material reality, in the sense of these abstractions are perhaps more real than the real representations, in the sense of it's just so much. If we're just making the truth value is based on how useful the thing is, the abstraction is more useful than the real thing, because the real thing gets way too complicated and way too muddled, and you're not going to be able to think about all that complexity. So you abstract away, so then you don't have to worry about that complexity. You worry about the complexity to the point that you need to understand the complexity at your level, and then go from there. And that, like, nobody knows how a computer functions in totality, because it'd be literally impossible to get all that complexity. But if you just know at your individual level, you can get a lot done that way. We're able to do so much with only, I don't know, it's probably in the order of hundreds of thousands of computer engineers in the world, something like that. Because there's not many. If you think about the major computer companies in the world, a lot of them employ like 10,000 employees. It's usually the upper end you hear. But that's not even engineers. So engineers is probably in the thousands. So yeah, there's probably maybe tens of thousands of engineers that work on these problems. And none of them know the complete thing that they're working on. So that's, yeah, it tells you about the power of abstraction. And then again, we're only applying abstraction in the scientific engineering sense, but can you apply that in these other non-scientific ways where, again, you have a character, and then that character represents an abstraction of certain archetypes, and, you know, a lot of people fall into those archetypes. It's just true. When you look at people in the world, you can see that they fall into certain archetypes. They're still individuals. They still might have their individual quirks that fall outside their archetype, but the archetype does a really good job of explaining that type of person, like 90%+ probably. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Very, very interesting. Next time, we'll discuss things that are not related to religious thinking and Christianity. I think I want to get off this topic as soon as possible, but we'll discuss some more other things. While I was writing the Substack article, I came to some other thoughts that I wanted to talk about, but it kept veering off the main thing of like actually talking about the podcast. So I was like, okay, let's focus on only talking about the thing in the podcast that I wanted to talk about. That podcast is 2 hours there, and I only showed like, I don't know, 2 minutes worth of clips in that podcast. It was a really interesting podcast. If you have any interest in like thinking about religious stuff, highly recommend it. But if you have no interest in religion, then, well, there's no point in watching that. So anyway, we'll see you all later. Goodbye. All right. First thing is I need to test how my voice sounds when you're playing the thing in the background. So let's
in the
see.
Early church.
Okay.
There was a debate around the physicality of Jesus' resurrection.
Thing, and when
yes.
I'm talking at the
so
same time,
the canonical
the
tradition
matter,
ends up
and is the audio
stipulating that Jesus physically resurrected.
Yes.
You must like, believe that
oh,
otherwise
yes.
you're heretic.
Yeah, and that's part of the,
loud,
the Catholic
et cetera,
particular
et cetera,
emphasis
yeah.
on the divinity of the body.
And
a lot of the Gnostic tradition
because I'm probably just going to react to the thing.
Says that the thing that's being gotten wrong.
Rather than like talk in the middle of it. But you know, you want to make sure that your voice is above the thing that's on here. And then also this thing is still loud enough that you can hear. So I'm going to stop talking so that I can listen to this playback.
Is the idea that there was this literal resurrection.
Right.
No. The kingdom of God is here and now. The resurrection is inside of you and you attain it through gnosis. I mean, the Gospel of Thomas doesn't even mention the resurrection, doesn't mention a crucifixion. It's a list of sayings.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. And this is probably going to be the blooper clip. Oh my God, that's a whole minute. That's wasted time, but you know.